Excellent moment, sir, for the president. Donald Cook on the line, sir.
Hello, President.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you, Don?
Hello, Mr. President.
What do you know?
Well, not a great deal.
Well, looks like our friends across the way are gonna move pretty drastically.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
They feel they can't avoid it?
No, they're going, I imagine, to 7.
Mm-hmm. That is very drastic.
They doubt that that'll hold too long. Some of them say that it may hold a year or two, but they doubt it.
Yeah. Our people here at the board know all of this?
Oh, yeah.
Are they going to be able to stay put, or will
they? No, they'll have to go with them.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And they're going to make their announcement, I guess, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Needless to say, this is very much in confidence.
Oh, my goodness, I would never speak of it, of course. Is it possible at the time when the board does something that there can be some statement emanating either from the Treasury or perhaps even from the White House indicating that this is not related to internal considerations of...
They say in their statement that it's primarily international. And I told them to cut out that word primarily. It, by God, is all international.
Yes.
And I would like for them to indicate it's more or less temporary. If things change, they could adjust it. They don't think the banks will follow suit. Martin doesn't.
Mm-hmm. They might on short term, but they can't on long term because there's an enormous amount of long term money looking for outlets. This is true of mortgages and long term corporate bonds and so on, but they might try to give it a little whirl on their short-term loans, because that's been in a little different situation than long-term credit. The thing that I believe they have an obligation to make very clear is that this is not related to any inflationary considerations within the United States, and that it's unrelated to the desire to hold back continued economic expansion in the country. Unless that's done, I think it can be very rough on your domestic program, Mr. President, and I think it might spell the turning point on the on business expansion. So that if there's any way of emphasizing that, I think it would be a very good thing.
You mind telling Dillon that?
No, I certainly don't.
Dillon's meeting there with Gardner Ackley, and just say since he called you the other day, you've been thinking about it. It looks like that this, I wouldn't say talk to me because I don't want him to feel like that he's done it, but I told him I wanted him to talk to you, and he's talked to you so much of carrying on for him, but I think you're justified in just calling him. He's meeting with Gardner Ackley now.
Is he in Washington?
Yeah, he's
in
Washington.
Office?
Yeah, just call the White House switchboard and tell him you want him to get Mr. Dillon for you, my suggestion.
Yeah.
Just tell him the president asked you to call Mr. Dillon, and you're one of my friends. You want to get him. He's at this Treasury right now.
Yeah.
With Gardner Ackley.
Yeah.
And just tell him that you've been thinking about it since, and if the British do this, and if we have to do it, we ought to be positive to point out that it's not related to any fear of inflation here or so on and so forth, whatever you suggest.
I'd be glad to do that, and I think it really needs to be done and emphasized.
We got this FBI report.
Oh, you have it already?
Yeah.
I thought they were still working.
No.
It
says that they interviewed Weisel, and he says that he the most competent executive and attorney that he's ever known. Frank Stanton says that he's a first-class citizen. He's never heard any derogatory information. His character, loyalty are above question. And he's highly recommended for any position of trust and responsibility. George Patterson said that he's a patron of the arts, particularly opera, that he's a devoted family man. He has fine character, reputation. He has vast experience, dedication, and devotion. He'd be a tremendous asset, anything that he did. Highly recommend any position, trust, and responsibility. Roy Halquist, an attorney and banker, said he'd handle his tax matters 10 years. He's fair and forthright, unusually capable. Manuel Cohen, that he's head of one of the largest companies in the United States, one of the most competent men he's ever had contact with. He knew him as an employee at SEC. He's very reputable. He considers him to be high moral character, reputation, loyalty, above question. Arnold Pines says that he employed him as a subordinate. He was a year subordinate. And he had never heard anything derogatory about you in his life. Holds in the highest regard. The associates are all reputable. Peyton Ford says that he's closely associated with him and he had high regard for his integrity and his ability. He said, although Mr. Cook has no legal trial experience, I don't know why he had to throw that in, he's very competent in his job. He possessed excellent administrative ability, highly able man. He recommended him for any position of responsibility. Bazelon stated that he, the transition of that agency to the supervision of the Attorney General, you proved yourself a very capable, very brilliant, very honest, integrity. Never had any reason to recommend you for anything. J. Lee Rice, President Allegheny, said you're good morals. He'd like to see a man like you in the government. He'd feel better about it if you were. You're good for the country. You'd be qualified for anything of trust and responsibility. 78 other associates were interviewed. They stated he is intelligent, imaginative, dynamic, and that he is very outspoken and honest to a fault, unquote. Those acquainted with the other members of his family advised they all persons of good reputation. Also stated Mr. Cook is an authority in the fields of public utilities, securities, and finance. They recommended for position, any position of trust. Mr. Cook's father is deceased. His mother is in Escanaba, Michigan. His sister is in Evansville, Indiana, and he has one brother, Harold Nelson, of Harmony, Minnesota. Information has been received, credit from law enforcement, with no record of pertinent information. The records of Metropolitan Police indicate he was cited in 42 for disobeying a motorist sign.
What was that?
Disobeying a motorist sign for $5 in January 42. The files of the FBI contained three applicant fingerprint cards. On two of those cards, Mr. Cook indicated he was arrested during 1927 by Omaha police on a charge of investigation, unquote. The disposition which was, quote, released. On the other fingerprint card, he indicated arrest by the Omaha police on charge of no title for automobile. The disposition of which was released. The files of identification of the FBI contain no information concerning any arrest of Mr. Cook. He has no arrest record. The records of Lansing police indicate a person identical to Mr. Cook's brother, Harold Cook, was cited for speeding. The records indicate the same person was cited on June 61 for speeding. No dispositions were located. Bar affiliations, he's admitted to practice 1940, he's a member in good standing. Relationship with sharing, the December the 23rd issue of the Evening Star contains an article captioned Alien Property Report by Justice Department for Wiley is finished. Indicated with the demand of Wiley at the United States Senate Justice complete a series of reports, indicated Wiley requested data of the 10 largest property firm. One of the reports concerning sharing received legal fees. It indicated several former employees received legal fees. The article indicated Cook was a former member of the law firm. During the course of investigation, they furnished the FBI the list of names of former employees. who had been engaged with the firm. One of those firms, Mr. Cook, has indicated the law firm of Cook & Berger received $2,250 in legal fees by the sharing in 47, 48, 17,738, 49, 18,000. Office of property indicated Cook had been a member of the board of directors sharing from 47 through 49. Bert and Michael advised during the investigation, records indicate Mr. Cook was appointed board on April 47. He resigned on November 26, 49 when he was appointed securities exchange. He advised Cook's former law partner represented that company sometime during that period, but all vouchers are destroyed. After 7 years, the amounts of fees paid Mr. Berger cannot now be determined. Rival Berger, assistant professor, during the current investigation, he and Cook were partners. He described Cook as a person of good character, scrupulous and honest. He said Cook has great capacity for work and is superior in all respects. He stated Cook's reputation, loyal and associates above question. Regarding sharing, Berger advised that after sharing was no longer under the control of the Office of Alien Property, the president of the corporation, Brown, a personal friend of Berger's, retained Berger as a counsel for sharing, and he stated any fees received service were equally divided with Cook, since he was a full partner in their law firm. He advised any such fees were payment for legal services rendered. He advised he did not recall the amounts involved. Records of the library indicate Cook appeared as a witness before the administration of the Trading with the Enemy Act, Committee on Judiciary, November 1653, November 17. He testified as former director of the Office of Alien Property. A review of his testimony indicates he testified regarding possible improvements in the administration of the Trading Enemy Act and was not questioned regarding receipt of any legal fees for sharing. And that's all about you. Then in November 43, an informant stated that he had a list of approximately 300 names of individuals allegedly belonging to the Communist Party. In Detroit, on that list appeared the name of Harold Cook. It was indicated he was a member of the Frederick Douglass Club of the Communist Party and was a subscriber to the Daily Worker. The Daily Worker was an East Coast communist newspaper.
When was this, Mr. President?
In November 43.
43? That surprises me.
On that list appeared the name of Harold Cook, 115 East Grand Boulevard, Detroit, Michigan. It was indicated he was a member of the Frederick Douglass Club of Communist Party and was subscribed to the Daily Worker. The Daily Worker was an East Coast communist newspaper, which suspended publication on January 13, 58. Investigation at that time established that person was born on April 29, 1906 at Escanaba, Michigan, and was employed at the U.S. Rubber Company in Detroit, Michigan, where he had been employed since April 31 as a boxman. He was chairman of Local 101, United Rubber Workers of America, Congress Industrial Organization. In December 43, he was candidate for election to the executive board of Local 101 on a ticket supported by the Communist Party. During that investigation, two former employees advised they considered Harold Cook to be either a communist or a person who approved the communist principle. During the current investigation, it was determined that one of the former fellow employees is deceased. The other has been contacted and advised he is unable to furnish any additional information concerning Cook. A fellow employee at that time stated he was well acquainted with Cook. He was a radical individual and a very militant labor leader. He did not believe Cook was a communist. The informants who had furnished reliable information who were familiar active with the Communist Party of Detroit advised that time they had no information pertaining to Cook. The current investigation established that Cook's brother, Harold Nelson Cook, was born April 29, 1906 at Escanaba, Michigan, became employed at U.S. Rubber on April 28, 31, was so employed in Detroit, Venezuela, Cuba, New York City until his retirement February 62. He is presently residing in Harmony, Minnesota, where he is reportedly a very successful restaurant operator. Appropriate informants who have furnished reliable information who have familiar activities of the Communist Party in Detroit, Michigan, and Minnesota advised that Cook is unknown to them